The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome to our Sunday Open Lines Space Show program. Open Lines means these are the topics that you want to have discussed for today. And that's not very good grammar, but anyway. It's your show. It's your topics. We prefer that you keep on target of space, science, STEM, STEAM, or something related to that. And also, first-time callers are very, very welcome. We really want to hear from you. So that's what Open Lines is all about. So let me jump into a couple of announcements. So first and up front, I'm going to be out of town for medical reasons. April 30th, which is a Monday, through Sunday, May 6th. So the last live show I will have will be Sunday with Dr. Tom Jones, and I believe that's April 29th. And then I will resume live programming, if all goes well, on Monday, May 7th. So I'm thinking of putting some links up on the upcoming show menu list of suggested shows and homework for Monday, Tuesday, and Friday while I'm gone, and Sunday while I'm gone, because it'll be Monday, Tuesday, Friday. So 4 shows I'm going to miss. So I'll put some links up for some archive shows that you might enjoy playing that maybe you won't find on your own or go to on your own, and you can listen to those or do nothing or watch television or watch baseball or play other oldies but goodies. But there'll be at least 2 shows listed for the Monday program, 2 shows for the Tuesday program, 2 shows for the Friday program, 2 shows for the Sunday program. I'm not going to list anything for Hotel Mars since that's a John Batchelor program and not my program, and I don't control that in any way whatsoever. So I just want to make that announcement again. There'll be no live programming from Monday, April 30th, until we resume Monday, May 7th. And I appreciate your patience and all of that with that. So for today, and it is Open Lines, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. So do remember there are no call screeners. Let the phone ring and we'll answer it and bring you up on air as soon as possible. We do hold people over the break. Often we even skip the break because of a caller. And we answer the phone during the break, too, if that's applicable. So, again, 1-866-687-7223. That is the preferred way of communicating with us during a live space show program. Just so that you'll know, the line is turned off right now. If you're calling it, you will get a busy signal, and that's because I have some business to conduct and some announcements to make, and then I'll turn the line back on, and I'll let you know when I do that. And you can also communicate with us by email, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com, and through our blog, which is on our website, thespaceshow.com. All the way over to the far right to upcoming shows, and that's a menu item, and open up that first page. Today's show is the first page. It's always the first page. And then that's also our archive blog page, so scroll all the way down to comments and post your comment. You can do it as a guest. You do not have to log in to discuss or one of the social media accounts. And as soon as you post it, I will get it and can integrate it up on the air. But again, the toll-free number, 1-866-687-7223, is our preferred way of getting your comments and questions on a live show. And then email drspace@thespaceshow.com. So in the upper left of our website, you will see some menu items. So under support, you'll see the Cafe Press store, and this is where you would buy logo wear for the Space Show if you're interested. There's also a Listen Live button in that upper left menu, and this tells you how to listen to live broadcast, archived MP3s on our website, the podcasts that are on different servers, and also Alexa, if you're into Amazon's Alexa service. The TuneIn player is embedded on our website. So if you have any questions about any of that, don't hesitate to email me. To me, the most important part of the website is to support the show. That's the center right on our homepage. So remember, we are a 501c3 nonprofit with one, onegiantleapfoundation.org. The Space Show is a listener-funded program, meaning your financial support keeps the Space Show on the air. And I kid you not, I know a lot of people raise money on the air and do this and that, and they say, we really need your support, and on and on and on. Well, I am here to tell you that if you like the Space Show, and if you like Space Show funding, and if you, content, and you like the frequency of the Space Show, help us keep doing it, because I'm unable to financially support the show on my own, and we need your support. And I don't know how to say it any plainer than that. So if you are a federal U.S. government taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift because we are a 501c3, which is a nonprofit status. And if you are a California taxpayer, then we're a public benefit corporation here in the once golden state, and you get a tax deduction against your California taxes here. I don't think any of this is applicable at any other state. I don't think state tax deductions for state nonprofits are reciprocal. But check with your own tax advisor if you have any questions about that. And we appreciate your support. So you can go visit our parent, onegiantleapfoundation.org. And also, if you happen to have any questions, don't hesitate to email me. The best address to get me at is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. You could also use David at onegiantleapfoundation.org, but the Dr. Space seems to be the more prevalent and useful address, and we appreciate that. We also have sponsors for the Space Show, so sponsors get a banner ad running across our homepage. You can change that banner ad as often as you like. And I read a short statement from the sponsors that the sponsors have prepared on each regular length Space Show program. And since today is a regular length Space Show program, I'll start out and I will thank the National Space Society for being a sponsor. They have their ISDC event coming up. It is in Los Angeles, California, May 24th through the 27th. And check it all out. You can get to the ISDC website very easily by just going to nss.org. And then if you're interested in seeing space settlement in your lifetime, of course this may depend on your age and your health, the Space Development Network is an online organization that allows you, the space advocate, to join together with others hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, to advance the plan for space development. We need people with a wide variety of interest and skills. The network is free to join, so check it out at spacedevelopment.org. Hand-to-hand and shoulder-to-shoulder reminds me of a game we used to play in grade school in Tulsa called Red Rover, Red Rover. Did anyone else play that game? I haven't thought about that in 65 years. I wonder if that's still played by kids. Okay, the Space Foundation is a sponsor. They just concluded their 34th symposium. It was last week. Their website, where you can find out more about it, is spacesymposium.org, and they usually archive their major meetings, and you'll start to see those appearing on the web if you haven't already seen them. I would urge you to watch as many of them as possible because they're really good, solid events, spacesymposium.org. Tom Risen is going to be with us Tuesday on the show. He was at the Space Symposium. He's going to talk about it. He's an Aerospace America journalist. He was also at the Bridenstine confirmation hearing. We're going to talk about that and some of the articles he's written. But do check out the archived 34th Space Symposium programs. You'll be really, really happy about that. And then also for the first segment, the Integrated Space Plan is our sponsor there, the highly detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another. Explore hundreds of individual elements in more detail at thespaceplan.com. And you can buy your own copy of the plan. There are two versions of it, the academic version and the regular version. It's very impressive, and it's inspiring. You can frame it. You can hang it on the door or the wall. Your family will like it. It'll turn kids on to space. You need one, and it's called The Space Plan, and you can get it at thespaceplan.com. So do check that out. Okay, so it is open lines, but there's a couple of things that I want to announce or talk about besides the fact that I'm going to be gone on April 30th to May 6th, and you'll see archive show recommendations in place of live broadcast that week. So one thing, I know it's kind of old news now, but I'm going to talk a minute about it, is the passing of Art Bell, who was 72 years of age. He died last week, I believe a little bit over a week ago. And I don't know why he died or what the causes of death were, but in many, many ways, Art Bell is responsible for the space show. So fortunately, after I completed my doctoral dissertation and I was doing some speaking, mostly on the venture capital work that I had done for my dissertation, which, boy, has that been turned upside down, over and under. I should do a show about that. I mean, what a difference from the early 2000s to today in venture capital and commercial space. But anyway, that led me to being invited to be on the Art Bell Show. And usually I was invited as a sub-guest of Richard Hoagland being a guest. And you may wonder why. What did Richard Hoagland have to do with this? Well, when I was writing my dissertation, I heard Richard talking on a local San Francisco radio station about Mars and some other things. And at the time, I was reaching out for contacts in the industry that I could rely upon and use, you know, as references or help in writing my commercial space dissertation. So I believe at the time Richard was in New Jersey. I tracked him down through the local San Francisco radio show, and Richard and I became friends. And you know, we stayed in touch, and I don't remember exactly how he contributed in those early years to my dissertation, because my topics weren't really the topics of what Richard, you know, talked about. I wasn't very specific about Mars at all. It wasn't a tourist site. I did talk about space tourism and single stage to orbit launchers for orbital space tourism. That was a big part of the early part of my dissertation. But Richard was on a lot of Art Bell shows, and Richard brought me on many, many times as a guest for an hour or for 90 minutes. I got to know Art, and I have since been on his show a few more times, just one-on-one with Art, and several times with George Norrie, who has taken the show over, although I haven't been on in about a year or a year and a half. But Art, and I was a very big fan of the Art Bell Show, even before I knew about Richard and before I was actually launching the work on my dissertation. I had been listening to Art and many of his topics for years. So for me, it was a really big honor to be on Art. But Art as a host and as an interviewer was unbelievable. To this day, I have never found anybody interviewing me who could come close to Art Bell. I mean, Art was a genuine master at interviewing people. I mean, I've been on the BBC. I've been on other government state TV stations, Romania, Bucharest, other things. I've been on, a lot of people have interviewed me from Newspace, from this, from that, and the other. I probably several hundred times. I have never come across anyone who was equal to Art Bell. He was courteous. He was well-informed. He knew how to draw a person out, make them feel at ease. I mean, Art was just amazing. And I also listened to how he treated his callers and his guests. So he never yelled and he never, demeaned them, put them down, made fun of them or anything like that. He was respectful. And I really liked the way Art handled the program. And when I decided to do the radio show, which I've told the story before, so I'm not going to tell it now, Art was my role model. And he has been my role model to this day. And I never met Art personally, and I never got a chance to socially hang out with Art or do anything with Art. I mean, I did take my kids and my mom to Las Vegas many, many times. We drove through Pahrump a couple of times, thinking we could see all of his antennas and his triple-wide trailer or whatever it was, but of course we never found anything. And but, you know, it was an honor and a pleasure to be on a handful of Art Bell Show programs with him, with or without Richard Hoagland. I did both. And, you know, Richard was always courteous and respectful, and, you know, he's a great guy. I know he's very controversial, and my mentioning his name, I know many of you will run and hide and probably tell me you'll never listen to a Space Show program again. But, hey, you know, if you're that close-minded and you're that prejudiced and opinionated, God bless you, and I hope your life works for you and happy. But Richard has been a friend to me, and in the early days of starting the Space Show, he was a real friend to me. So I have not forgotten that. And but Art is the one who passed away here, and that's who I'm talking about. And I will miss him. I think he was an unbelievable contribution to talk radio. I don't know very much about his personal life. I know they said he died and he was with his fourth wife. I know that when I was on his show, he was married to Ramona, who was the dream of his life, and then she unfortunately passed away. So the other wives came in after Ramona died. But I don't know very much about his personal life and whether, you know, y'all would hold it up and say it was a wonderful life or not. I'm not interested in that. But I will miss him. I have tried to model the Space Show after the way Art Bell ran coast to coast, and I still think he's the best talk show host ever. And, you know, Art, if you can tell what's going on back here on Earth, if you can hear any of this, if you remember interviewing me, just, you know, I hope wherever you are, it's a great place, and God bless you, and thank you for your contribution to my life, both in entertainment by listening to your show, but in affording me the opportunity to role model you as a talk show host for the Space Show. So to me, the Space Show has a lot of dependency and connections to Art Bell and his original Coast to Coast show, and I will miss him. And I think we have lost a real talent and a really terrific person when Art passed away. And so God rest Art Bell. A couple of other things that I can talk about. Paul Spoudis wrote an op-ed, which many of you may have seen. It was on his Air and Space Smithsonian blog, titled, Have We Lost the Moon? And this is about the Deep Space Gateway and the plans and the confusion and the National Space Society, not the National Space Society, the National Space Council, and what's happening with returning to the moon or LOPG or this or that. I would urge you to read it. And it's titled, Have We Lost the Moon? And some of you who may have read it may want to talk about what Dr. Spoudis wrote about. There's another article that I'm looking through my list of what I want to talk about. China says they're going to the backside of the moon, and they plan to grow flowers and silkworms there. So I'm sure you can Google this news story if you are not familiar with it. And maybe some of you will want to talk about China's lunar plans for the backside of the moon for flowers and silkworms and why. So that's on the table. Congressman Bridenstine from Tulsa, Oklahoma, got approved as the NASA administrator by one vote, strictly partisan measure. I know many of you are very unhappy about that because I'm getting your emails and your hysterical rants about how the world is going to fall apart and how the sky is going to come crashing down on us because Bridenstine is now the NASA administrator. And, of course, I'm getting others sending congratulations back and forth to each other as if each of you did something to help get him nominated and are really thrilled. So, as I've said before, I'm not a big supporter or fan of Bridenstine. I've stated why. I don't feel like I want to do it again. But if somebody calls in and says, why aren't you on the Bridenstine fast track to whatever space program and jumping up and down and applauding, I'll tell you why again. But otherwise, it's well documented on the space show. And I'm not a cheerleader for a lot of space advocacy things. That doesn't mean I'm always right, just because I think I'm a little grounded and more reality-based than cheerleaders are. But anyway, my congratulations to him, and I hope he puts in a good staff that knows what they're doing to support him as administrator. And I guess time will tell, right? But we do have a new NASA administrator. Over the last couple of days, Newt Gingrich posted a space vision, his latest space vision. So you can read this on Newt's website, and it's also on YouTube. And I don't have the YouTube address, but I guess you could Google Newt Gingrich space vision. So I read it, and I thought I was reading La La Land Disneyland fantasy in many ways. I'm still surprised that this is coming from Newt, because if we thought his debate comments in Florida way back when in that presidential election when Romney was running for president were a little over the top, wait till you read his space vision. So, look, he has a vision, and, you know, I think in terms of the big picture, most of my audience would probably concur with it, but he's definitely a cheerleader for a lot of space advocacy stuff. He's a cheerleader for SpaceX. He's a, and that's okay. I love SpaceX too. But I'm just, as I said a few minutes ago, I'm not much of a cheerleader. But I know many of you are, and you can't be daunted, and you don't allow anything to rain on your cheerleading parade. So, you know, maybe you're right in the long run. I don't know. But you ought to be familiar with Newt's new space vision. And again, it's on his website, and it's on YouTube, and the URL for it is pretty long, so I'm not going to read it on air. But if you can't find it and you want to talk about it on Open Lines, if you email me or call the show, then I will make sure I put it out there for people to do it. Or if somebody finds it and you want to post it real quickly on the blog for today's show, hey, that would be cool. You could do that. But y'all may want to talk about Newt's vision. Late yesterday afternoon, John Jossi, who to all of you is really Fremont John, sent a URL that is updating progress on the SpaceX BFR. So this is a video. I don't know who does the video. The guy sounds like he's an expert, okay? And that he really knows what he's talking about. I don't know who he is or anything about him. Maybe Fremont John is listening and can give us some of the background on this person. But he had great supporting slides and information, and he really did sound like he knew what he was talking about. So, again, I don't know the person's credentials. But you want to watch this. I think it is a 7-minute video about the progress SpaceX is making on the Raptor engine and the BFR. And it was really enlightening. And I learned a lot from it. John, thank you for referring that to us. I appreciate that. And again, John, what you may want to do if you're listening is post your email that you sent to me on the blog, and that way everybody will have the URL for the video that you were talking about. But this is a good one, people, and listen to it, I think you'll like it. So those are a couple of things that, there is a tour of the moon. I posted this on one of the blog shows in response to, I think, a Jim Fincannon comment. I forget which show Jim was commenting on. He comments on almost all the shows nowadays, and sometimes the comments go over 100, depending on whether he has engaged Robert the Inventor or Dr. Brandenburg or someone else. So I don't remember which show it was that I posted it on, but it is a 4K video from LRO of going around the moon, and it is really cool. You ought to see it. So I got it from one of the NASA newsletters that I subscribe to, and it's got a long URL to it, and I'm trying to see if there's so if you Google moon NASA Science Multimedia Tour of the Moon 4K, you might get it. It's about 5 or 6 minutes long. Very, very spectacular. So if someone gets it, post the URL on the blog. But if it doesn't get posted on the blog, I'll put it up there because I think you guys will really and truly enjoy that. So, now one other thing. I have opened the toll-free line, and somebody's already called on it, so I got a caller on hold. But one other thing I want to suggest is that depending on the callers that we get today, I know some of you have emailed me and said, put me on the line. I want to talk to this guy. Well, I'm willing to do that, but my phone lines, when I start a program, are not set up to do that. So if you want to call and talk to someone who is on the toll-free line, email me so I can very quickly set up one of the phone lines, and I will email you back the phone number to call, and I'll let you do that. But I don't prepare for that in advance because I don't know that anybody wants to do that, and it is additional work that I do before the show starts, which I don't always want to do. But there is that potential, and then I will try to hold the caller on the phone for you to call on that other line that I email you back with that information. And just to let you know that that's a possibility. Let's see who our first caller is. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you?
Hi, David. It's Mike Lissner calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, Michael. How's things up in the land of the cold?
Actually, you know, the weather's pretty nice. I went down by the ocean today and checked things out, and the weather's finally turning for the better here. Spring is taking hold.
Did you go wading in the surf?
No, I had my camera with me. I was trying to do wave shots, but it was a low tide and the waves were crappy, and my feet got wet, but I'll live.
When are you going to do an updated space law show for us?
You got to send me some dates.
Are you ready for that now? Because before you weren't really ready for it.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of projects going on, but most of them have been finished, thank God. And send me some dates, and we'll
I only have June available now, and I haven't started third quarter dates yet. But I'll send you what I have in June.
Actually, June would probably be a good time to do it.
Okay, I'll send you after the show today June dates. What's on your mind for your call?
Well, I put this in the email. I'm going to say it right out on your show. I told you.
So you want to play "I Told You So" about Bridenstine? What if I say, you know what, after he bombs as administrator, because I don't really think he's qualified to be there, I email you and say, I told you so, Michael.
That's fine. All's
and,
fair.
And we can engage in petty little schoolyard 5-year-old games, right?
But then it turns out to be a brilliant administrator, which I think he's going to be. I can tell you, I told you so again.
Well, that's right. You can. I don't think there's several reasons why I don't think he'll be a brilliant administrator. And hopefully you can listen. I know you don't listen late at night on Tuesday, but Tom Risen was at the Senate confirmation hearings and hearing and had a lot to say about it. Plus, at the space conference, what happened when Pence was there and he was there as well. So it's not at all as if everybody is chomping at the bit to have him, and he's brilliant. What he told me in a quick email was everybody's fed up that there's no administrator. Let's just take this one and get on with the show. But anyway, I don't really think he's qualified, but my God, he's got so much confusion coming out of the administration, and I don't know that anybody can, some people clearly are more qualified to run a massive bureaucracy like NASA.
Well, the question is what the hell?
What are they going to do?
You need what the hell? What qualifies you to do any job? That you're appointed to. I mean, Nowadays, it's just a matter of who. Sometimes there's some people who basically get in there because of political expediency, others because they really have some talents. But a lot of people who are qualified for the job don't get in because of politics. I can only talk from my own experience, having worked with his office and met him personally, and had an opportunity to actually have a sit down in a small group with him for almost 3 hours. He's pretty brilliant, and I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I know he's going to probably piss off a lot of people too, but that's not a bad thing either.
Well, I heard him last year at the space conference, at the space symposium. I was totally unimpressed. He gave a keynote speech. I couldn't believe that everybody's fanning over him. And he is from my. If I were still in Tulsa, he would be from my district. But I'm not there. My objections are, number one, he's a politician, and that's an untested role for being the head of NASA. Maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. Mm-hmm. Number two, the guy's never run anything in his life, be it a tire company, be it a 31 Flavors mm-hmm. ice cream show. He was in the Air Force and in the Navy, and he flies fighter jets, so he does know a hell of a lot more engineering than I know. But he's clearly not an engineer. He has no clue how to run a 30 or 40,000 person government bureaucracy, and he's not qualified to do it. So it really depends on who he puts in as his deputy administrator, and does he know how to navigate those waters and run something like a big government bureaucracy. But one of the things that really gets to me is, and it goes beyond Bridenstine, is I don't support taking people out of Congress and putting them in cabinet or other appointed positions. Because what happens is the person that fills that vacant seat in Congress doesn't usually have the expertise of the person that got grabbed out to run NASA or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's a shortcoming. And Bridenstine was a really key, important figure in Congress for commercial space and for NASA and for a lot of things that we believe in. And that's gone. We don't have that congressional support. The people in Oklahoma that are likely to support him don't give a damn about space.
Well, he wasn't going to run anyways after.
I understand that. But he's out now, and there's no space expert person coming in to fulfill his shoes, and it could be a Democrat. That fulfills his shoes, just like what happened with the Sessions seat.
He has some really great ideas, but, regrettably, he didn't have a lot of seniority, especially when it came on the House Science and Technology Committee, and really, on the Space Subcommittee, there's a lot of nuttery on that, and unfortunately, he really didn't have enough of a voice to overcome a lot of that nuttery. So I think, in that respect, he was, kind of diminished in that role. This is my gut feeling, and my gut's right most of the time.
Well, I think it now depends on who he has as a deputy administrator and who he has to rely on to really manage and run NASA and to deal with a lot of the technical kind of issues that come up with NASA. Well, and he also has to be able to deal with Scott Pace and the National Space Council, and those are very powerful entities.
What you're really excluding, though, the technical and all that stuff. That's important. But what we've really got to do is deal with the internal politics of NASA. And you know, people say, well, NASA doesn't have any internal politics.
Yeah, right.
Every organization has internal politics, and really your success or failure in administrating any government agency like that is your ability to handle and wrangle, you know, the internal politics.
Well, he's got broader than internal politics, because he's got Scott and the Space Council politics to deal with too.
Yeah, but in that case, I think things will work out. I think he'll have a much smoother time with the National Space Council. In that regard. So I don't see any real major bumps in the road in that relationship.
Procedurally, does the deputy administrator need to be confirmed by the Senate? How does that work when he names someone to replace Lightfoot, for example?
I don't recall that they have to be confirmed. I think that's mainly a choice that's made by the administration. I'm not sure. I could be wrong on that.
Do we have any information on who he is thinking about appointing to some of these positions?
Nope, because he has been radio silent ever since he got nominated. I know I communicated with his office on a couple times on matters, and they would not give any comment whatsoever, and they basically went completely silent. While his nomination was in the process. So he hasn't said a word.
Well, we'll wait and see, and hopefully it turns out to be good. We don't need NASA to be adrift. But
I think that's been the case. NASA's been adrift for a while. That's my personal opinion. It's been more PowerPoints and CGI than it really has been, you know, hey, this is where we're going. Maybe we can get things turned around in that respect.
Time will tell. What else is on your mind?
God, a lot of things. You got 2 hours? No. A lot of things going on. We'll talk about it in June.
Okay. Right. And you're still doing your newsletter.
Oh yeah, you got your March. You got the one at the end of March, right?
Yeah, I'm just giving you an opportunity to plug.
I still do it. I mean, I've been not doing as many special issues as I used to just because of time constraints, but the quarterly issues are on time, and subscription is growing, and that's a good thing, and I'm getting good feedback from it, so I'm pleased with it.
Okay. Talk to you in a month or so.
Yep, send me some dates.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Listeners, Michael's off the line, and the toll-free number is available if you would like to call us. Excuse me. With what is on your mind, and hopefully you will. And yes, somebody is calling. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you?
Hi, this is Mark from Petaluma.
Hi, Mark. What's on your mind today?
Well, as much as I agree that politics and whatnot is important, it just doesn't interest me as much as the engineering aspects.
Okay.
And a few previous discussions of zeroed in on the gateway, and I don't think that the gateway's location is so important. In real estate, they go location, 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 but in space, my inclination is to think along the lines of infrastructure, infrastructure, infrastructure. And I think that a space station that will grow in abilities, starting out with the ISS and then proceeding with, I think they'll now, instead of building a bigger one, they'll probably build something a little bit more refined, a little smaller. And from that, in low Earth orbit, they'll build and build and build everything from a Volkswagen to a Mack truck. And as time goes on, they'll expand that ability out further into geocentric orbit and L2 and maybe around to the orbit of the moon, eventually orbit the moon. But my point being is it's a natural, organic progression that literally cannot be stopped. And as much as I think, you know, politics and economics and whatnot are also very important factors, it's something that as time goes on, entrepreneurs will recognize the value. Oh, we can make a better toilet. So they make a better toilet. we can make a better bathroom. Same thing.
So you support the Gateway Project?
Well, I don't support the location. I support the need for the next phase of engineering to zero in on space stations that, as time goes on, become more and more capable. That's what I support.
So
where they're located, I...
So what about the plans to return to the moon with humans? Because it appears that it's shaping up to be one or the other, and with the Gateway, we're not returning to the moon with people.
Well, there was another guest that was mentioning the somewhat cross purposes of going to the surface as opposed to going to the orbit. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I personally think that the infrastructure, like I said before, it's all about infrastructure. More infrastructure makes more things possible, and less infrastructure makes things more difficult and even unsafe. So if you have more infrastructure out there, I think it makes it safer and more possibilities, and it grows on itself.
Well,
otherwise,
we may get some emails and listeners who call in and refute you and try to explain why returning to the moon with people and creating lunar habitats and a lunar outpost or the beginnings of a settlement are far better. I am in that camp. I'm not big on LOPGI. I don't think that it's a good plan. I think it's BS, and I don't think it's inspiring. I don't think it'll do anything for anyone, and I'd rather see us go to the moon and start learning to live on the moon and
well,
push it up for that. And so since they're making it one or the other, because there isn't any money for any of this stuff, by the way, so how much of any of this is going to get done is a $64 million question. It looks like they're choosing this alternative, and of course you look to see where the money goes, and there's no wonder why they're choosing this one and the lobbying power and everything else. But I think it's a bad move, and I support going to the surface of the moon, and I don't like to see this being a sidetracked issue. But again, they don't have the money to go to the surface of the moon. Let's not kid ourselves.
Right.
Even with the increased budget that they've gotten, NASA can't do what they say they're going to do on any kind of a timeline that they talk about. So maybe all of this is just smoke in space and in the sky, so to speak. I don't know. But I'm of the camp, we go to the surface of the moon, start living there, learn how to do things on the moon, and push out from there.
Well, to a certain extent, that brings up what I consider to be the history of NASA, the way the history of our country, parallels. People have pointed out the parallels before, but Von Braun, his legacy was Saturn, the rocket, and it's the yardstick by which everybody measures rockets since, and will be for quite some time, even long after VFR comes along. But what NASA did by doing that, they're priming the pump, and they got the Saturn going, and then they got Apollo going, so now they have a way to get man off the surface effectively, at least only three, and they built on that. So now they know how to get people into space and back in a capsule, very efficient, but not very many people. And then it builds on that. The space shuttle, and now there's seven people that can go up. But they made mistakes. They figured out, oh, we can't really do it with a space shuttle. It's not as safe as we want it to be. But they learned from each step. They learned. And so now we have the X-37, which can't carry anybody, but it's the same configuration. And then they have now Sierra Nevada is going with a manned item. I don't know how many people it holds, but it's more than three, I'm sure. And so each step builds on the other. And I, as much as I would like them to go to the moon, I want them to go to Mars too, but I think if they don't go to any of these goals in a progression that supports itself as each step is made, then, like, for instance, Mars would just be footprints and flags, and March, like, 1969 was. And
many believe that's the outcome of going to the gateway. You do have a couple of people that want to ask you a question by email.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to do it. But then, callers, we need to move on because I'm getting other emails for people who want to use a line and introduce other topics. So one question for you comes from Doug in Southern California. If we can use a Falcon Heavy and Zeus lander to launch directly to the lunar surface without going to the gateway, then why does that infrastructure do anything other than cost money?
It builds knowledge and pays for people's employment.
So it's a jobs program.
It's all a jobs program. What we're building, what the space industry, it's building the space industry. It's building a way for people to get around, a way to make money. It's the railroad system all over again. It's the airline systems all over again. It's even the shipping. I mean, they started out with canoes, and now they have these super tankers. It's all the same. Step by step, you learn from your mistakes, you move on, you make something bigger, you make something better, you figure out what works and what doesn't work. It's a natural process.
So, okay.
I'll get off.
No, I got another one for you.
Oh, okay.
I know neither Doug nor you are going to come to a meeting of the minds, so we're going to move on. Marshall, who is not calling us for a change, so we don't hear. This is Marshall calling from nowhere, Oklahoma. Anyway, Marshall says to the current caller, that's you, Mark, I don't even know what Marshall's doing here. What is infrastructure? What would you like to see? So I think he's somewhere off in big picture definition land, but that's his two questions for you. What is infrastructure, and what would you like to see?
Well, right off the bat, I'd like to see a robust rocket industry that can do anything from launching a small satellite all the way up to, you know, huge amount of cargo like Elon Musk wants to launch. At the same time, a parallel path of rockets that are designed to be safer. Because who cares if we lose cargo? We want safe transportation for human beings. And that would be the infrastructure that still needs to be finished up. Elon Musk has gone a long ways towards establishing that, but you know, I remember back in the late 90s, long after the space shuttle was, they had found the weaknesses in it, writing to Aviation Week or whatever it was, what we need is a big dumb rocket. And here, 20 years later, Elon Musk is building a BFR. So, again, one step at a time. You got to be patient, and maybe it's not going to happen anytime soon, or not soon enough for everybody alive now to be part of the experience. But you know, I just assume it happened rather than not happen, and I think it will eventually happen. And whether or not I'm here or not is not really the issue. It's whether or not we get off the planet, and the way to do that was with infrastructure. Once the infrastructure of thoroughly thought-out rocket, widespread rocket program, it's not one rocket, it's not five rockets, it's worldwide rockets, including China, then they're going to start developing the low Earth orbit. Yeah, I know, yeah, it's not as fun as a planet on the moon, but it's incremental, and that structure, the infrastructure of lots and lots of equipment and abilities in low Earth orbit. After your quote of the book, Halfway to Everywhere,
Uh-huh.
Man, that really made sense to me. It was like, I think that's what prompted all this thought about, that's going to make the low Earth orbit, the train station, the St. Louis of the railroad company. It's going to be the low Earth orbit is going to be the train station for furthering infrastructure. Maybe that's not the right word, but I've always liked it, so.
Did you read the Paul Spoutis article about have we lost the moon that I mentioned up front on the show?
I have not.
Okay.
I was going to look up that Newt Gingrich since we're done with the show here.
But you should also go get Spoutis's article, and if I can remember after the show, I'll email it to you.
Oh, Paul.
But you really should see what Paul said, because he goes to the core of the LOPG and going to the surface of the moon issue. And I thought it was a really right-on op-ed piece.
Yeah, I admire him quite a bit.
Urge you to read that, because it's directly applicable to your phone call. The Gingrich thing isn't really applicable to your phone call, but you know he certainly has a big picture vision. We can say that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Oh no, you get me going, but no, I said my piece.
Well, if you've got more to say, give us a call, okay?
All right, thanks.
A couple of other emails, listeners. Rick Kwan, I have a free offer for some lucky Space Show listeners. Many listeners will know of Rex Ridenour, president and CEO of Ecliptic Enterprises. He is a technical and biz leader who held lead roles at JPL. And, caller, you'll have to wait, at JPL, and has spent the last 20 years doing small space projects, da-da-da-da-da, and he's also on the show quite a bit. His firm is organizing a webinar Wednesday, April 25th, 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Pacific. I think it's worth getting insights to that end. I've created a discount code. This is too long to read over air, but if you're interested in this, read Rick's blog post on this. And he's got a free offer based on, attending this webinar. So that is on the blog. If you're interested, do read what Rick has to say and go for it. And then Fremont John posted a link to the BFR video that I mentioned, and he says he doesn't know anything about the guy who's doing it or the production, but it was very impressive. And if any of you know anything about it, let us know. But the link for that video that John sent me last night is up there, and I would urge you to watch. I think it's about 7 or 8 minutes long. We have another caller on the line. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. How are you, and what's on your mind, and where are you?
Hey, this is Terry in Cuero.
Okay, Terry.
Yeah, I think we've officially lost the moon. I read the article by Bill Gerstenmaier. I used to admire him quite a bit, but I think he's just a political hack anymore. He in his article today, he says, well, we're going to the Lunar Gateway, and we're going to start signing contracts next year.
Where did you find the article today?
I get a lot of these articles off the iPad. It's on their little news
section. Can you post a link to it on the blog for us?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay, please do so we can see it.
I will.
Did you read Spoutis's article a couple weeks ago?
I will do that after the show is over. I'm going to look at that.
Okay.
But Gerstenmaier, he says, it's not going to cost a lot of money. Don't worry about it. If it doesn't cost a lot of money, it's probably not worth fooling with on the Lunar Gateway. It's going to be in the wrong orbit. It's too small. And did anyone even contact Bigelow to see how much it would cost for that big B-300 that would actually have room to put some people in? I bet they never even were contacted. I'll bet they didn't.
Probably not, because they're not Lockheed. And
no.
And it's the traditional aerospace groups that are behind this. So, I'm assuming it's going to happen. But then you do hear the National Space Council and the others talk about going back to the moon with people and all of this. So somehow there's a disconnect here, and then there's a big disconnect with the NASA budget because it's not funded well enough to do all of what NASA wants to do, including putting people back on the moon. So Bridenstine's going to have a fun time sorting all of this out and having his chains pulled by Congress and the National Space Council as to what the preferred policy is going to be that he is going to be charged with carrying out. I think that all of this stuff is up in the air, and there needs to be some cohesion brought to the table.
They're strictly looking for a justification for the Senate launch system. Strictly. I mean, they're looking for anything that they can say, we've got to have it. We've got to have it to get there. And it's in the wrong orbit. They don't even have a budget for a lander. They probably wouldn't be able to land if they had a lander.
No.
And it makes no sense.
And the lander that they want to build in a couple of years is for cargo, is in supplies. It's not for people.
And it's just going to be, can you imagine what it's going to cost to ferry supplies and people to the lunar gateway? I mean, it's going to be just...
Well, I'm not supportive of it. I think we should go to the, if you want to go to the moon, go to the surface of the moon, build a settlement there or an outpost, learn how to live on the moon, learn how to do all of this stuff, and then reach out from the moon, learn how to make fuel, learn how to do all the things that everybody talks about. But even that's not funded. So, it's very frustrating.
There's nothing funded except, you know, James Webb and SLS. And the ISS, after you get those three, what's left?
Well, you still got a planetary missions that are being funded and stuff. But listen, I guess it'll all sort itself out in time, but I think that the LOPG is probably going to maybe over time meet the same fate as the asteroid retrieval mission, which I thought was bunk. And I was never supportive of that mission either. But... we'll see. My vote doesn't matter. So,
as far as infrastructure goes, you've got to have money. I mean, we were talking about refueling spaceships going to Mars. I mean, it all costs money. There is no money for all of this stuff.
Terry, you're being asked by listener Kim in Mexico.
Uh-oh. Hi, Kim.
Can you talk about the LOPG orbit? So instead of just saying it's in the wrong orbit, I think she wants you to explain that, although it has been discussed and explained on many space show programs as to why this is a crappy orbit. But go ahead. Why is LOPG in a crappy orbit?
Well, it's sort of an oblong egg orbit. I don't know the particulars. It's not a circular orbit.
No, it's too far. I don't have the exact, but it's not in a good location to reach and to get back down to the surface of the moon. So it's not in the more favorable Lagrange points where you could put this thing and have easy access from Earth and easy access to the moon. But I'm sure if Doug is listening, and he is, he could probably explain it more technically than I can, because this is his life's work, or his life's passion, I should say. And many others who are far more technical than I am can explain it. But they've got it in an offbeat orbit that is going to be very challenging and costly and limiting in terms of going to the moon, servicing the moon, doing all sorts of things. It could be in a better location.
Why can't they put it in a circular orbit?
I think that this is a political decision, but again, I wasn't following the Deep Space Gateway. I mean, I did shows about it early on last year when it was first announced, and it was going to be a compromise mission with the United States and Russia, and Lockheed was the real player, and I did programming with Lockheed on the Deep Space Gateway way back when. I mean, when hardly anybody had ever heard about it. But I don't remember the technical parts of why they're putting it where they're putting it, but someone will give us that information, and then I can share it on air with Kim and others. But it's not been an area of big interest for me, And I'm sorry to see that it is taking front and center and replacing going to the surface of the moon with people and not even going to have a lander. And when it does have a lander, it's going to be a robotics. It's not going to be for humans. So I want to see us go back to the moon. I want to see us learn to build and develop and engineer and convert rocket fuel and do all the things that everybody talks about on the surface of the moon and incrementally build out from there. And I think this is a real sidetrack, and I am sorry to see it happen. But on the other hand, unless something gives with NASA funding, there isn't any money to go back to the moon. They already had it planned to go back to the moon in the late 2020s. That's longer than it took to go to the moon the first time around when we had zero technology. So the funding concerns are not to be discounted. The rhetoric is probably not to be believed. And now you've got the Gateway, which they claim will be cheaper. And I'm not sure that it will be cheaper. But it will certainly be a digression from returning to the moon. And I'm not real happy with that. But as I said, my vote doesn't count. So I'm just going along with the ride like all the other taxpayers are. You know, open up your wallet and let them reach in and take it. And they know best, because there's just not a lot that any of us can do in our individual advocacy to overturn some of these policies or to get a different policy put in place. It's very, very difficult to do that.
So, well, I'm telling you, if commercial enterprise doesn't get us into deep space, we're not going to go.
Probably.
Not with the fools that we've got leading us in Congress. They're trying to make jobs in Alabama and all that. They could care less whether SLS ever launches or not, as long as the checks are still being written and sent.
Here, I'm getting some orbital information. Fremont John says, this is from Paul Spoutis' blog, the LOPG will be placed in what is called a rectilinear halo orbit, an elliptical path varying between 7,000 and 70,000 above the moon. The idea is to make the LOPG a test Mars transfer vehicle, in that SEP, which is solar electric power, is being considered as a way to move cargo between Earth and Mars. As a staging mode for going to the lunar surface, the LOPG leaves a great deal to be desired, as it has both a high propulsive cost, greater than 2.4 kilometers per second, and serious phasing problems for lunar arrival and departure. So, and now it's all coming back to me. For those who want to be on the moon and get humans back to the moon and develop the moon and a settlement on the moon and start doing all of this, this is a really bad place to get back to the moon to do that from. It's costly and it's energy intensive, okay? There are better orbits for doing that. But since that's not an objective of LOPG, and they don't even have a lander, and the lander they're planning for early 2020 is a robotic lander, not for humans. They don't care about getting humans back. They're setting this as a departure point for Mars, which may or may not ever happen. I mean, who knows? Again, there's no funding for all of this stuff. So that's the issues around the orbit, and I remember it now, and John, thank you for that. I've been trying to get Spoutis back on the show, but he's been ill, and he's not ready to come back on, but he will, and we'll get all of this in detail. I'm getting inundated with blog comments and emails, and I have a hunch that more people want to use the phone. So,
well, I'll get off. But so, 7,000 to 70,000 is just absolutely ridiculous.
But it's a departure orbit for Mars, as I understand it, and it's not, and it's a challenging orbit to go to the surface of the moon. So again, if you're like me and a lot of the people who want to go back to the surface of the moon, this is a screw job. What more can
I
say?
It definitely is. Well, let me get off the phone so someone else can get back on.
Thank you. And Kim sent in a note and said thank you to Fremont John for sharing that information. The line is open. And you know, I'm going to, it's the top of the hour. I can't believe this is the only topic we're talking about. I'm going to take us to break, okay? And we'll be back in 3 minutes, so don't go anyplace.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of the Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. Welcome back, and I guess I need to modify my vision, everybody, and throw in that we got to go to LOP G because wow, this is going to really facilitate human space exploration. So anyone out there with a good voice who wants to do a new voiceover for my vision and we can strip in LOP G for this, I think that's just a real winner here. We do have sponsors. I need to be careful here because maybe some of them are engaged in LOPG. I want to thank Orbital ATK. They're a global leader in aerospace and defense technology and a partner you can count on. And they're coming back on Friday for a space show. Now, I don't really know who's on the show yet because they haven't named it for me. I will put that up on the web as soon as possible. But they're going to be talking about some new changes with the Air Force EELV program and this rocket program that they're doing called Omega-A. So it should be really interesting to hear about Orbital ATK. There is a press release about that, so you guys can find it. AIAA, the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, is our sponsor, and they have their membership shaping the future of aerospace every single day. And go to their events. They have great networking, great people that you can meet. And the noise you hear in the background is coming from Dr. Doug, who is trying to get his lander to work to go to the moon from LOP G. AIAA, we thank you for being a sponsor. And then Celesta is still the only Memorial Spaceflight Service provider in the world. And they've got, as we've been talking about, 5 flights this year, including a suborbital flight in New Mexico, an orbital mission from the Cape on a Falcon Heavy rocket, a lunar mission coming out of New Zealand, the one that my mom and dogs are on, and that's later in the year with Moon Express on the Rocket Lab Electron rocket, another Vandenberg orbital mission, and a Voyager mission. So Celestis is very, very busy, and we thank them for their sponsorship. Great people, and I know it's hard to think that funeral people are great people, but as I keep saying, they're probably the best people I've ever done business with in my life. So check them out, Celestis.com. And our caller Doug is with us from Southern California, noise and all. Hi, Doug. Are you still with us? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Let me know if the noise gets too much, but I think I'm in a place where there's not.
No, it's better now. So I think we're okay.
Let me just, I'm not calling about this, but let me just make a comment that where you locate infrastructure really does matter. And that is the gateway is at a location in which there are no material resources. There's no way to produce propellant there. There's no way to just grab shielding there. You have to import all of that stuff. In going directly to the surface of the moon, sure, the idea is, well, you bypass infrastructure and therefore you don't have infrastructure. And that's not true. You're actually establishing infrastructure on the surface of the moon. You establish a propellant depot on the moon in the form of refueling the lander. You establish a crude base there, and you just push, telerobotically push regolith on top of the habitat. And so you get your shielding, sort of for free. So to the second caller, I'd say, yeah, let's do infrastructure, but let us do it at the right location.
Okay, but that's not what you're calling for.
No, that's right. I wanted to mention, I have mentioned to you in an email about a fellow on the FISO, that's Future In Space Operations teleconference they do once a week.
Correct.
And one of the presenters, it's really fascinating presentation, this last one. He just made a passing comment that really jumped out at me, and he said that we now have about 50,000 days of experience in space. And I thought, 50,000, that sounds like a lot. So, I sort of pulled a Barry Levin and did a back of the envelope calculation. So I Googled to find out how many missions there had been in space and what sort of the average length of time on the International Space Station, the Mir, and these sorts of things. And so it turns out that there's been about something like 536 astronauts. We had programs which were short, like Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and the early shuttle program. But then we had the stations where people really spent a lot of time, that Space Lab first, also Mir, and, of course, the International Space Station. So Wikipedia says that there's been 393 visits to the ISS, sometimes that's by the same astronaut, but it's 393 visits. There have been 104 astronauts on Mir. I didn't get a number of how many separate visits there were, so I'm saying instead of 104, let's put that to 130. You add those two together, 393, 130, that comes to 523 visits to a station. So if you take the 50,000 hours divided by 523 people and then divide it by about 30 to 31 days per month, so 30.5, when you divide that out, it comes to just about 3 months on average for a stay on a station. And typically on the ISS, the stays range anywhere from 4 to 6 months, I understand. So, just like in physics class when we did our problems, we were told by the professors, you want to do your calculations, and then after you do it and you get an answer, you want to stand back and say, is this a reasonable answer? And if you stand back and say, is 3 months or maybe longer a reasonable answer, I think actually, yes. I think that's about how long people stay on the station. So actually, I think 50,000 days of experience in space actually is probably a realistic estimate.
So you're saying 50,000 days. Is that correct?
Yeah. Not years, of course.
And did you include Skylab?
No, I did a quick, when you do, just like Barry Levin said, when you do a quick and dirty back of the envelope calculation, you want to find out if you're within an order of magnitude. And I think that you are. I think it is in the tens of thousands. And I think the number 50,000 seems actually pretty accurate.
Interesting. I would have never thought that.
Yeah. Of course, Skylab had just relatively few people compared with Mir or the International Space Station, certainly. And so it's a minor percentage, I think.
It would probably, I don't even know if it would add 1,000 days to make it 51,000. I don't know that.
I doubt it's even 1,000 days.
Interesting. The guy who was speaking on FISO did not tell how he computed the 50,000, did he?
No, it was just a passing comment, but I'm like, whoa, 50,000 days? So I had to, really curious, had to do my own math and figure out, is that a reasonable number? And I think it actually is. It seems like, probably plus or minus 10,000, he's got it.
So are you ready for LOP G instead of the surface of the moon?
No. We're going to waste our time and money. You know, I think the Gateway is going to happen, but I think it's just totally wrong. And I've mentioned this before. In a hallway at ISDC, I spoke with Gerstenmaier, and I said, "What, you know, if we can hand off, like in a relay race, you don't have a middleman. You hand off from the incoming runner to the outgoing runner. Why can't we do the same thing to the moon? Just rendezvous, hand off a payload or a cargo or crew module." And he said, yeah, actually, you could do that. And essentially he's saying to go to the moon, you don't need to go through a gateway. And it just blew me away that he acknowledged that, you know, but we continued down that path.
I know you are into lunar landers, but have you seen the slides from a student in Dr. Thangalevu's class from the end of last year on his idea of the Phoenix lunar lander? He's gone on to work for Boeing in Huntsville, and I'm trying to get him and Madhu to come on the show to talk about it. But I'm just calling it to your attention because I know your interest in lunar landers, and I think you would be fascinated by this student's design project and work and his history. He gives the history of lunar landers and all sorts of stuff in the slides. So it is available on the net, people, except I don't have all those web addresses on how you find my dude's classes. It's,
you know,
a little confusing, as you know.
Yeah, I would love it if you could send me that information or even post it on the blog.
I wonder if I need Madhu's permission to post it. Let me see. I can post 20. So it's the 2017 class, and the Phoenix lander is 003.
If it's on the internet, if it can be reached by hyperlink, I think you can post it.
So I'm making a note to put. I may put it in the summary of the show rather than on the blog, and that way maybe some people will actually read my award-winning journalistic grammar prize summaries, which nobody ever reads. So that's where it's going to be, listeners. I'm not going to post it on the blog. Read my damn summary, okay? I will embed it someplace in the summary. We'll play hide-and-seek, okay?
All
and
right.
There will be a URL to Madhu's 2017 design class at USC, and the Phoenix lander is slide group number or project presentation number 3, which is 003.
All right. David, I wanted to call in to mention I am developing a new page on spacedevelopment.org.
Okay.
So it's going to be dealing with the BFR. And the issue is coming up with we are being shown images of like the big tooling, the thing that they're going to make the straight part of the body of the BFR. There's actually a picture of that at the port of LA, and I think this really indicates that Elon and SpaceX are really pushing hard to make as fast progress as possible. And I think that makes sense. I think the earlier they show results, the sooner that people would seriously consider. A partnership, you know, a public-private partnership. But the problem is that people are, a number of people are taking Elon's 2022 timeline for the first launch of the Falcon Heavy as gospel truth, and they are not basically they say because the BFR is going to be available to us in 2022, therefore we don't need to do anything in the interim. We should just sit on our hands, wait until this comes forward, because that's going to solve all of our problems. And so on my webpage, I sort of go through systematically describing what are the realistic steps that have to be done in order to get the BFS, the big Falcon spaceship, and the BFR both to development. They both have to go through hop tests. The BFS needs to go into space at least, if not actually into orbit, and then it has to re-enter at least lunar speed and successfully land. And the only way to get it to lunar speed is to build a BFR so it can launch the BFS up to lunar orbit so that it can come back. So we can't really know if this very, you know, bleeding edge physics sort of or engineering spacecraft is going to work until pretty much it's all done. And you can do that lunar return test. And what I'm doing on the webpage is I'm putting links into all of the setbacks that SpaceX has experienced until now, you know, all of the crashes, the explosions on the pad, the grasshopper that blew up, all of these things. And I'm basically saying, hey, you know, is SpaceX going to experience no more setbacks between now and 2022? And if there are some, they've had about 10 setbacks. If they have some, then how's that going to affect the timeline? And when you go through what, you know, using the timeline of what they've done before and presume a few setbacks, there's just no way that 2022 is a possibility. In fact, I think probably the earliest that they could achieve this is about 2026 would be the earliest, presuming about 4 setbacks. At 6 month delay apiece. And so I encourage people to go ahead and look over my webpage and give me some feedback. I think it's reasonable what I'm putting up, but I'd like other people's opinion on that. It's going to be at spacedevelopment.org/bfr.html.
Did you see the video that John sent us all?
Yes, I did. Very nice.
So it looks to me like even SpaceX says they're pushing for an early date.
Well, of course. I mean, that's what Elon said. That's what I said. And that's fine. I mean, they should push for an early date. But from a policy standpoint, we need to recognize that early date is probably not going to be met. I think it's unlikely to be met. And so that's going to push it even beyond what the current administration could take into account, even if the current administration has 2 terms. So I think that we need to be thinking about what do we do in the meanwhile until we get a proven BFS.
Well, everybody, what I would suggest is, because giving out URLs on air doesn't always work, but post the URL that you want to direct people's attention to on the blog for this show. And then that'll be a shortcut for everybody to find out spacedevelopment.org and what you want them to see.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do that. And the page is not up there yet. I think in the next probably about 3 hours I'll go ahead and put that page up.
Okay, well, I'm not going to have the show probably archived until late tonight.
True.
Or very early in the morning.
True. Okay, yeah.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay,
thanks. So, listeners, we're available if anybody wants to call. We're almost at the 90-minute point, which is a regular-length space show program. So there's a lot of other topics that I threw out there if you all want to talk about them. We don't just have to talk about let's get back to the moon. Does anyone want to comment other than Michael Listener on Bridenstine and what this may mean for NASA? I think I have another caller. Hang on, please. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you? Where are you? Thank you for calling.
This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John in Fort Worth. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I listened to this the lunar the lunar thing that everybody's talking about, this station, right?
LOPG, yeah.
Yeah, that thing. Okay. But the issue is, I guess, with this new, now that we actually have an administrator, this was all done kind of in a vacuum with leadership, right? That was basically the same directives that existed from the previous administration, right?
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if there'll be any new initiative that's going to come in with the new administrator. I mean, he presumably has had some time to think about why he's waiting to be confirmed what he would like to do.
I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to be up to him. I think you're going to see it coming from Congress and the National Space Council, and I think they want all of this because it is a jobs program, and it is what they're recommending. It's not what space advocates and lunar advocates want.
What's that music we're getting? Is that me?
No, I don't know where it's coming from.
Well,
I have no idea, but I'm hearing it. It's on our phone line, and I'm not sure where it's coming from either. I thought at first it might be coming from someone out inside with the what do you call it, with the radio on real loud blasting it out there.
I don't have a radio on.
No, I don't know what it is. Do you still hear it? Because I don't hear it anymore.
Yeah.
You're still hearing it?
That's weird. Anyway, well, let's hope that nobody else is.
No, I don't know what it was. I don't know.
They've gone now. So anyway, it must have been something from the computer that there's all these pop up things. I finally just got rid of every browser thing. Okay, so but the other issue is, well, you have to have something to do with all the equipment we're building right now. I mean, we got the SLS coming along, we got the Orion coming along. This may be the most. I mean, the alternative would be to cancel this and try to build a lander, right? But that would take just the time to do it, you know, would probably, you know, be several years. I mean, look at the time it's taken to develop everything else, right? I mean, we haven't even got commercial crew flying yet, and we have supposedly at least one very good innovative company that can get things done and all that, right? And even they're not there yet. So
what you're advocating is even worse than a jobs program. You're advocating busy work. We've built all this equipment. Now we got to find something to do with it. And what they want to do with it is really, to a lot of us, I mean, not everybody, but to a lot of us, is counterproductive to developing the moon and learning to live in space and going forward. Plus, it's represents a huge waste of money, and they're making compromises even in the facilities that they're building. So, I mean, for you or anyone to say they got to do something with all this equipment they're building.
Well, what you can do is not do anything with it. I mean, the bottom line, if you don't use it, you lose it. So, I mean, also true of government funding.
Well,
I guess we could do some unmanned probe missions in the meantime, but
we have to fly this
stuff, and that gives us a place to fly it to.
Well, or you do something more useful with the money, which is not going to happen because they don't do anything useful with the money.
Well, we can't. Well, it depends on what you think is useful.
Well,
you don't want to destroy the. If you don't, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm all for a lander. I'm for the lander, but how much money does that cost, and what's the time frame to get it?
You have a question from Doug, because everybody knows your position. I mean, you're a stereotypical on the space show. I am with my vision statement, not including LOP-G. So Doug says, how long would it take for ULA to modify a Centaur upper stage to be a lunar lander to start delivering cargo? I don't know if you know the answer to that. I don't know.
I don't know if I either. I mean, is that even...
Doug Mayo.
I mean, is a human-rated lander?
I'll read the question again.
I understand. No, I know, yeah.
How long would it take for the clock is ticking. Can you win the money? How long would it take for ULA to modify a Centaur upper stage to be a lunar lander to start delivering cargo? So I don't know the answer to that. Doug, if you know the answer, email us or call us, and I'll give you the other line number. And but I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to say 24 hours. So I don't know how long.
4 years, maybe. I don't know. Depends on the budget, probably. But the thing is, okay. But the deal is that is this thing really that expensive? What they're planning on building?
Well, it's all expensive if you don't have money to do anything.
But, I mean, okay. But the thing is, budgets come in funding streams over years, okay? And if your dream project of what we'd like to do can't really utilize the money in the near term anyhow, we need to do something with it or you're going to lose it. That's just the bad news about government budgeting. That's why it's inefficient, but that's the way it is. And I think we ought to get to flying some of this equipment we got. It looks like something you could do. I mean, it's still, I think you'd be learning. I mean, we haven't even been outside the Van Allen belts in a long time.
When is SLS going to, you want to fly this equipment, when is SLS going to fly? I mean, it's being pushed back as we speak. So
well,
God knows
that might
if
be
we'll
an alternative.
Ever fly.
Why don't we just accelerate SLS?
Well, maybe.
Put the money to that and get it built.
Well, I don't think just throwing money at it.
That's not the problem, huh?
Yeah. Doug, wait a minute. Doug, you sent another email, but everything in it is blank. So I don't know what your follow-up email is about. So if you did intentionally send us another email and it's got content in it, please resend it.
I guess if we hadn't canceled the asteroid retrieval mission, we wouldn't be in this shape, huh?
Well, I was not a supporter of that garbage either.
But at least we'd have an asteroid to study its chemical and material structure.
You really
think
they would?
And also have some experience about moving asteroids around, which could be part of the Earth defense project.
Do you really think they would have done that mission? I don't think that mission would have ever happened. And I remember sitting there at a NASA press conference at AIAA in in San Diego, so it was a couple of years ago, and Gerstenmaier was given a press conference about this, and everything was focused on you need SLS to do this. If there's no SLS, there's no ARM, and they were going to fly SLS and do this mission probably around right now. I mean, they're so far behind with so many delays that they could have probably never even gotten ARM off the ground. Here, let's see. Read the subject line. So he sent me a blank message. I'm supposed to read the damn subject line. Okay. Can you send me the number for the other line? Okay. Do you really want to talk to Doug, John? Should I do that? I'm going to let the choice be yours.
Well,
you're called. Should I let him? Do you want to talk to him?
Sure, why not? If you want to.
Hold on. I can't do everything at once. I am a multitasker, but okay. So let me send him the number. It is area code 707. Everybody knows that, but the rest of it I won't give out on air.
Totally disrupt what I was going to talk about, the return of Lost in Space to, at least it's on Netflix. I mean,
I didn't watch it.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, well, look what you're missing. I mean,
what am I missing? I saw the trailer and I didn't think much of it.
Well, it may make the other one actually look better, actually, except for maybe the production quality issues that are really more about the time frame they were made in. I mean, the CGI today is obviously beats the little models back then.
It's on Netflix. We can go see it anytime we want, right?
That's correct. There's 10 episodes. It has a rather feminist flavor to it, I would say.
I heard that the robot is a hit, but the cast is not.
Well, the robot, I'm not sure I'll give away, but the robot is a little bit different than the idea of the robot in the original show. By the way, the new Dr. Smith is a woman. I won't give that too much away. It looks like the Marine now wears the pants in that family. But anyway,
does she have similar characteristics to the doctor on Lost in Space on the original, or is she a totally different character?
I say different. I mean, she's basically villainous, I think, at heart. But that's about where it ends. I mean,
well, I haven't seen it yet. So it's probably not on pay per view on Comcast. I probably have to log on to Netflix to see it. Correct?
That's correct.
And each episode is an hour or something like that.
But correct.
Okay.
And I only saw about 3.5 so far, but anyway. But she doesn't complain about her back all the time like in the original series.
Hold on. Doug, are you there, please?
Yeah, but let John finish.
He's finished. John, you go at it, each other.
That was just shadow puppets for you got through.
Doug,
John,
go ahead.
I didn't want to interrupt.
No, what are you interrupting? Lost in Space? Come on.
Well, maybe that's important to him.
Go for it. Why did you want to speak to Doug? I mean, to John.
So, John, I mean, you make the statement, how much, this rhetorical statement, as though there is no answer,
how much is it going to cost to develop a lander based on, you know, how long it takes to develop everything else, you know? Well,
right.
first of all, you need to bear in mind that we have two options. We have the government approach to developing a lander, you know, like the Altair lander of the Constellation program, which would have cost billions and billions in many years. Okay, that's one approach. That's that's the SLS Orion approach. It costs so much and it's taking so long. Or we could do the public-private approach, you know? So I wonder, do you only think about government development, or do you ever consider public-private, like LunarCon?
Well, it's not that I'm against it. I'm just sort of dealing with where we are and what we might do at the moment. I mean, if our new NASA administrator has the Gingrich bug, we might actually go that way. But it would be a major turnaround in policy, is all I'm saying. And the question is that doable at this point? Can we push it that far? And
John, I encourage you to think about what's happened with COTS commercial cargo, okay?
Right.
You know, the Falcon 9, I'm just going to have to repeat this. I've said it so many times on the space show. I just encourage you to think about it. And that is, the Falcon 9 costs $400 million of NASA's investment and about $400 million of SpaceX investment. The Falcon 9 is a two-stage rocket. It undergoes Max-Q. It does staging. They had to develop the engines, and it's a brand new thing. A Zeus lunar lander, as I keep repeating on the space show, you can start with just a modification of the existing highly, highly flown Centaur upper stage with the RL-10 engine. Okay, that's the Hydrolox engine.
Right.
It's not my idea. This is ULA and Mastin. So the idea that we don't have money for a lander, I don't know where this comes from.
Well, then why don't we develop that lander? Maybe that's what we should do instead of this this little space station around the moon.
Yeah,
I'm not against it. If somebody would really pursue it, but I mean,
you're not against it, but I'm not sure you're for it. You know, you've got this government-centric approach, and I'm hey, we have a history of public-private programs. There's nothing particularly unusual about this approach.
Okay, well, Mastin is going to invest the money, and ULA is going to invest the money to develop this thing on a 50-50 basis with the government?
How do public-private programs work? NASA partners with companies. NASA puts in a lot of money. Mastin's not going to put in a lot of money. They can develop a terrestrial demonstrator to demonstrate it. Okay, but that's only going to cost about $20 million. But it's going to be ULA, who they're the ones who own the Centaur upper stage. In a public-private partnership, just like what we've had before, NASA puts in most of the money, but ULA puts in some money, and the end result is ULA gets their Zeus lander developed and, to a large degree, paid for. They would love it.
And then ULA will then sell the actual production products to NASA as part of the lunar space program then.
Just like the current public-private programs, it starts with development, that's cost, and then it goes on to commercial cargo. So in this case, it would be lunar commercial cargo. And so NASA, just like they've done with commercial cargo, would pay ULA to fly its lander, ULA's lander, to the moon to deliver telerobots and habitats and things of this nature.
So we're still not going to land humans on the moon with this program. We're just going to basically do a robotic exploration.
Just like with the public-private programs, we start with development, that's cost. We go to cargo, and then using those same vehicles, we go on through, just like we're doing with the International Space Station. So you develop the Zeus lander, and you fly it in a cargo fashion. And then after you get flight experience, you're able to human rate the lander, and you need a crew module to be able to deliver the crew on the same lander that you used during the cargo phase. So to me, it's just like what we are doing now, only we just repeat it in a lunar context. I mean, that's what I've been saying for years.
Well, it may be a good idea. I mean, I guess the question is, can we get them to sign on to it? I mean, if it's viable, I suppose ULA has studied it and knows that it is, I assume. But
well, it's not built. It's still a PowerPoint project, so
right.
It isn't real yet.
But well, they know that. Well, okay. If they, well, that, they, that'd be another issue. But okay, I'm not against it. I'm just saying I'm also not against what NASA's doing either necessarily. I mean, you know, well, I obviously, I'm not the decision maker here. So,
I would invite you to go from being not against it to actually being for it.
But I'm not necessarily for canceling other options that are out there either. If they're not going to do this for some weird political reason or something, which I don't know. It's not like ULA did have a lot of good ideas. I know I did see some stuff that they were doing when this guy I had the debate with was on there. I'm getting bad with names lately, but yeah. But and I was reading some of that stuff. It does look interesting what they are coming up with as concepts.
They have a number of great concepts. Let me try to get the business, and it makes sense.
But I guess we got a new administrator. The question is, are they going to? And I don't know, the Space Council. I don't know, are they going to? Are there enough creative people on the Space Council or whatever to make a decision of this sort? Or are they going to pretty much continue with what they have been doing? I mean,
well, unfortunately, I think the powers that be are not thinking about Leonard Cotts. I don't know that they understand that that's a real possibility. So they were stuck in the old mindset of what can we use the SLS for?
I think, if we got some people up there. I mean, you're gone robotic, though, so essentially, at least for the initial phase.
Yeah, but the Zeus is large enough for crew delivery to the lunar surface.
Mm-hmm.
Look at ULA stuff. They advocate that. I think we ought to direct SLS to where that capability is needed, and that is Mars, not the Moon. So we still need it for Mars.
You need it for human... maybe.
Nope. I think you
need it for human missions to the Moon, too, if you're going to do that. This is a problem right now. We don't have a clear-cut idea what to do. We've got several different entities developing in all different directions in a very inconsistent way with each other. It's like everybody's doing their own thing rather than the same thing in a coordinated way.
Guys, wrap it up. I've got 15 minutes left, and maybe somebody else wants to get in on the act with another topic or something.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Doug. John, do you have anything else that you want to say?
I'm not saying I'm hostile to what Doug's suggesting, although I'm kind of committed to the idea of getting humans back into outside of Earth, you know, Earth orbit, and seeing what happens out there, because we haven't done that in so long, but it looks like that's running behind schedule too. So I guess that's it for me this week.
Everything seems to be behind schedule, doesn't it?
Yes.
So listeners, if you're interested, thank you, John. If you're interested in the lander, and you want to see what Madhu's student did with the Phoenix lander, then again, I'm putting the URL to that project in the summary write-up of the show. And again, this is Madhu's design studio class that he has all the time at USC, and this was one of the projects from one of his students. So I don't think it's real, but it is very, very interesting. We have another caller coming in. Let's... Hopefully, we'll do something other than the moon. Hold on. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you?
This is John in Fremont.
Thank you again for that great video. Appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah, that was very interesting. I'd never heard of that guy, and it just popped up in my feed. So
you don't know who he is either?
I don't. I subscribe to him, though. I'm going to, you know, see if he is consistent.
Well, let me know, because if he's consistent, I mean, he was impressive to me. I'd invite him to be on the show, but since I don't know anything about him, I'll use you as a filter. So if you think he's consistent, let me know.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So I wanted to make a few comments about LOPG. And then
why not?
About Newt.
Everyone else is. About Newt's great vision. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, Spoutis has got a really, really great blog post. So the other issue there is you know, NASA is not serious about going back to the surface of the moon or, you know, in situ resource utilization there, because their plans for another reconnaissance orbiter to suss out, you know, lunar ice the way we need to do it is not planned until 2022. So they're not even planning to, you know, prospect, do some, you know, resource exploration until then. So, and then the other point he makes is, you know, Trump and the National Space Council can say, oh, we're going back to the moon because LOPG is in orbit around the moon. And so that's how they'll say, yeah, we're back to the moon with this approach without really doing anything, much modification to, you know, what was Constellation and is now, you know, the asteroid redirect mission. So here we are.
Yes, here we are. And it looks like we're going back to the moon with LOPG.
Yeah, exactly.
If it really works, but they are doing a good job of spinning and trying to sell it to people. And you know, when I read press articles and articles on different news services like space.com and other stuff, I mean, you know, it gets good write up. I mean, I think, you know, NASA is prevailing in telling a good story about it. But again, for people who want to walk around on the moon, it's just it leaves something to be desired, to say the least.
Yeah. So in the other direction, Newt, of course, is overly enthusiastic, and bless his heart, he's got a lot of great ideas, and I think what he's stating in the article eventually will come true, but I think he's 10 years early. And so, you know, actually extracting lunar ice by 2024, I think, is optimistic, although I'd love to see it happen.
Well, and he's talking about routine space flight and cislunar space and this. I mean, it's really a very aggressive, broad picture space cadet space vision. I mean, he's really out there with it.
He is, and you know, it would be great if, you know, a small startup comes along and just pushes that agenda. But you know, it's going to be tough.
What do you think? I know the space cadets will probably latch onto it and really like it. But what kind of reception do you think it will get? Now, I sent it to maybe 20 people, and I think I only got two replies, yours and one other.
Well, if they're not tapped into really what's going on, if they're just...
No,
you know,
they are. They are tapped in, and I expected to get hell to pay from some of them who are on the very far-out progressive side of things. And I would have thought that the trashing of Newt would have been relentless, but so far I've not gotten anything other than from you and one other person.
Well, lucky he's not running against Mitt Romney for Senate, or else Mitt would have really gone after him again.
you know, more than likely, but I did read where Romney's being primaried in Utah in the Republican primary, so he's not a foregone conclusion as being the Republican choice for Senate in Utah. And I don't know whether Romney has ever kind of relented on his space views or not. Now, I know Mark Whittington was trying to arrange a debate and challenging him through the Salt Lake City paper. And, you know, we did a show with Mark about all of this. And at the time I did the show, there hadn't been any real response or anything. But I've not seen any kind of space commentary out of the Romney campaign. And the interesting thing is, Utah is a space state. It's got quite a bit of infrastructure, and some of you will love that word, and facilities from ATK are located in Utah, both for national security as well as civil space. So I don't know whether Romney has had any second thoughts about space or not. That would be just an interesting question to address on its own, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have any comment on that one.
What else is on your mind?
Oh, that's about it, David. Oh, I wanted to thank you for the show with Kristen Holly out of Lawrence Livermore. What a delightful show. I mean, she was just... I hope you invite her back.
Oh, I'm ready to propose marriage. I mean,
no, I'm with you right there.
Well, don't say that too loud. You are married. At least I'm an unmarried single kid with great. And notice I said kid with grown kids and a middle-aged dog. But no, she was terrific, and I really do want to invite her back. I also want to go do the Livermore Space Show tour that I talked to him about at the end of the program, and he told me they have a special media tour. So I was going to ask you if I am able to do a special media tour, would you want to go with me as part of the Space Show media team, helping me on science issues and stuff? Because you have more science than I do, and you've studied astronomy and stuff. So if it's possible to do that, I would see if I could bring you on as one of the Space Show Science Advisors for a media tour of Lawrence Livermore Lab. But I haven't had time to deal with it yet because of my need to go down to Southern California for medical reasons. But I am going to deal with it in May. So if that's something that interests you, let me know. I don't know if you could take off work to do it or not.
Taking time off from work would be difficult, but thank you for the offer, and I might be able to schedule some time, so definitely keep me in mind and give me some advance warning. And
I'm mailing the book to you, I think, tomorrow, so I'll confirm that with you by email.
Yeah, that's exciting. Thank you very much. So Alan Stern is going to come and talk at Foothill College in May.
Oh, is that near where you are?
Yeah, that's down in Los Altos. So,
okay.
He and David Grinspoon are going to be.
You'll get to meet both of them. Terrific.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I've never met Grinspoon. I'm going to get him back on the show to talk about the book as well, because his perspectives will be different than Alan's. But I haven't been able to handle that yet, but I will be doing that. But the book is great. You'll really like it, although it doesn't have all the pictures in it because it's an advanced media copy, but it's almost all there.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for thinking of
all
me.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call, John, and appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Listeners, we're almost at the top of the hour, and so the program is going to go bye-bye at the top of the hour. I think we got 5 minutes left. If anybody has an 11th hour email or something that they want to talk about, now is the time to get it in. So email is drspace, drspace, at thespaceshow.com, and the number is 866-687-7223. It's interesting, when the toll-free line is real busy, like it has been today, the email is almost non-existent. When nobody calls on the show, the email is really busy, except that the people who email are not the same people who call. So that's even more puzzling. So if you're an emailer and you never call anyway, why wouldn't you continue to email even though people are calling on the phone? So there's a lot of dynamics about calling the Space Show, using email, posting on the blog, sending a regular email that I truly don't understand. if there's some behavioral expert out there on blog and talk show phone calls and emails and audience behavior, and you'd like to talk to us about some of the behavioral characteristics of people with radio talk shows or internet talk shows, I'll give you a two-hour program. I would absolutely love to do a show to help understand behavior dealing with blogs and comments, and you know, why people do this, that, and the other, and why some call and some do email, and why they're not usually the same person. But I have enjoyed the program today, and it looks like we have hit an impasse on no more calls, no more emails. So I'll prepare to wind up. So we do have a really full space show scheduled this week. And let me tell you what we have in store. Jim Schwartz is back with us from Wichita State. He did The Myth of the Space Frontier, and he's got a whole series on human spaceflight mythology and versus reality, and he's back with kind of a part two of that program. So that's tomorrow at 2 p.m. California time. The Aerospace America journalist that I talked about, who was at the Space Foundation meeting and the Bridenstine confirmation hearing, Tom Risen, R-I-S-E-N, is with us on Tuesday evening. I'm not sure about Hotel Mars. Bachelor is on his way back from the Middle East, and I have yet to connect with him. Friday is the Orbital ATK show that I described earlier in the program. And Sunday we have a really interesting author on the program. He is an astrophysicist from the University of California, San Diego, Dr. Brian Keating. And he wrote a great book. I mean, I've been reading it. I really have enjoyed it. Losing the Nobel Prize, A Story of Cosmology, Ambition, and the Perils of Science's Highest Honor. So you can find it on Amazon. Again, the main title, Losing the Nobel Prize. And his name is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, Keating, K-E-A-T-I-N-G. If you want to look it up and read something about it before he is a guest on the show next Sunday. But it should be a lot of fun. His book is a really good read. Again, there will be, there'll be a show on Monday, April 30th with Tom Jones. Okay, I got that wrong when I started out. So Tom Jones is on Monday, April 30th. And then there's no show Tuesday, May 1st, no show Friday, May 4th, and no show Sunday, May 6th. So we're going to be missing three programs. Everybody, thank you for calling. And those of you who emailed, thank you for emailing us as well. It was a great open lines discussion. I appreciate all of you participating. Have a terrific rest of the weekend. Keep looking up. Stay safe. And goodbye from the Space Show and David and Pepper. Thank you all. Back again tomorrow.